This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, June 1st of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, have you noticed the extra piles of household items on curbs in recent weeks? Our latest story in the Follow the Waste series tracks what happens with leftover trash from student move-outs. We'll hear about land trusts as an opportunity to join local and national efforts to ward off the most catastrophic impacts of climate change. As always on Wednesday morning, Chris Moore will share his commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then, herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's the Hightower Lowdown. In the first half of today's A Public Affair, Shannon Young will interview prolific children's author Tui Sutherland. And then, at 9 a.m., Rosanna Longo-Better will speak with members of Modus Theater about their newest work to mark the 10-year anniversary of DACA. Then at 9:30, Cal Huss will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Nicole Rubin.
Governor Jared Polis signed Colorado's Clean Slate Bill into law yesterday. The law will make it easier to clear eligible criminal records if a person does not commit other offenses. An estimated 3 out of 10 Coloradans struggle with a conviction record or arrest, which can affect their ability to find work or housing. Around 1.3 million Coloradans will be eligible to get their records expunged. Colorado is the 7th state to enact a Clean Slate law. On Tuesday, a Boulder County judge dismissed a lawsuit from the out-of-state debris removal company, Ceres Environmental. The suit accused Boulder of unfairly giving the Marshall Fire debris removal contract to DRC Emergency Services. Ceres Environmental, a Florida-based company, filed the lawsuit against the county on April 11th. It said the DRC Emergency Services, a Louisiana-based company, was an unqualified contractor without experience, timeline, or pricing to justify the award. Ceres alleged that Boulder County negotiated secretly with DRC services and that DRC misrepresented its work experience with past wildfire cleanups. The county denied the accusations and pointed to a document rating debris removal contracts. The document rates DRC with 91 over Ceres 68 points. County Attorney Ben Perlman stated that we've learned throughout this process that in the highly competitive environment of private disaster management firms like Ceres, are focused more on money than on families affected by the disasters. Aurora is at risk as a lawsuit looms over Boulder's camping ban. Christian Garibay has more.
The city of Aurora's new camping ban rests on contested legal ground. The narrow conservative majority of Aurora City Council passed a camping ban earlier this year. Critics say the measure criminalizes homelessness and is a coercive measure to push unhoused people out of the city. Attorneys at the American Civil Liberties Union of Colorado, or ACLU, filed a lawsuit against the city of Boulder and its chief of police last week over two ordinances. The lawsuit argues the prohibition of sleeping under enclosed shelter or with a blanket is a violation of constitutional rights when no meaningful alternative shelter is available. The ACLU lead attorney on the case argues Boulder has pioneered anti-homelessness measures that other cities, like Aurora, have adopted. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Attorney General's Office are working to get parents information about the nationwide shortage of infant formula. Earlier this month, President Biden established the Defense Production Act to increase production of formula. The act permits the Defense Department to import formula from overseas. Colorado hospitals have just received infant formula shipments. Last week, Governor Polis signed an executive order declaring a disaster emergency due to the national formula shortage. The American Academy of Pediatrics warns parents to not water down formula or feed homemade formula to their child. A federal judge dismissed an electoral conspiracy theory lawsuit last week. Chiara DeMare has more.
A federal appeals court in Denver shot down the legal argument that Facebook and Dominion voting systems, among others, rigged the 2020 presidential election. According to Colorado Politics, the 10th Circuit Court found that the 8 plaintiffs who brought the suit lacked evidence to prove that anyone had violated the constitutional rights of every registered voter in the United States. Another part of the lawsuit alleged that Dominion voting machines were rigged to count more votes for President Joe Biden than former President Donald Trump. However, these claims have never been proven. The appeals court's decision upholds a previous dismissal of the suit made by a federal judge in April of 2021. The Associated Press has reported that out of more than 25 million votes cast in swing states, authorities found less than 500 cases of voter irregularities, far too few to change the outcome of the election. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
Boulder Parks and Recreation is asking Boulder residents to clean up downed branches and other debris left behind from May's wet snowstorm. They advise residents that branches no more than 6 feet long and 3 inches in diameter should be deposited next to or into curbside composite bins for pickup. Limbs bigger than 6 feet long can be taken to Western Disposal. The BPR has identified at least 230 trees that need work around Boulder, and as of Friday, they have completed work on 64 trees and will continue clearing the rest of the damage. Expect cloudy and rainy conditions and gray skies all throughout the Front Range today. In Boulder, it is a high of near 59 and a low around 39. In Denver, a high near 62 and a low around 39. In Fort Collins, a high near 63 and a low around 42. Outside the Boulder studio, it's 42 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Nicole Rubin.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. A huge number of university students move out of their residence halls between the end of the spring semester and the start of summer leasing cycles. They leave behind literal tons of trash in the process. As part of our Follow the Waste Stream series, KGNU's Sam Fuqua looks at what happens to all the stuff.
You know, moving in, students buy everything they need, from sheets to trash cans to dressers to hangers, all different types of furniture. And when it's time for them to move out, many, many of them transition from year to year to year in terms of where they're living, and they don't take those things home with them.
Kathy Carroll is in the alley behind a small apartment building in the Goss Grove neighborhood of Central Boulder. It's just down the hill from campus and a popular place for student rentals. Carroll is the community relations manager for Western Disposal. We're following one of Western's trucks on a route that's part of 6-Day Review.
6-Day Review is a requirement by the city of Boulder that requires commercial property owners to have their trash monitored through a 6-day period during student move out. So it is in place to keep the city clean because there's huge volumes of trash with the move in and move out of students.
Property owners can face fines if their trash piles are too big or if trash sits out for more than a day. So they pay Western and other trash haulers to pick up more often during the peak move-out times after spring semester and before the start of the academic year. We head a few miles east to Western's collection facility on 63rd Street, stopping in front of an open-air pavilion with a 20-foot-high mound of garbage under it.
What we're looking at here is what's known as a tipping floor. So it's where our trash trucks come in and they tip the material, they dump their load. Looking at these piles, I see quite a few mattresses, I see some furniture, some wood, and we did collect over the weekend, so it's very likely this is some 6-Day Review trash.
Off to the side, a pickup truck with a trailer is unloading next to a jumble of shelves.
Look at all those bookshelves. Look, that's like a load of bookshelves, furniture. Look at all that.
Almost everything here on the tipping floor ends up in the Front Range landfill, about 15 miles further east in Erie. But it's a different story on the CU campus. The dumpsters are bigger, but so is the recycling effort.
It was completely full. That's been flipped at least 4 times a day, so that's 40 yards of trash going 4 or 5 times a day.
Angie Gilbert is standing outside a dormitory next to one of those big dumpsters you see at construction sites. It's the afternoon of graduation day, the last day for students to move out of the dorms. Gilbert runs the Zero Waste program for the CU Environmental Center. She's been working 12-hour days all week, coordinating a campus-wide effort to recycle and reuse as much of the student move-out stuff as possible. We head inside the lobby of the dorm called Libby Hall.
We're standing next to kind of an industrial rack here, like you'd see at a store. We have collected as many hangers as we possibly can this year, and those will go back to that reuse program internally. Along here are on the top are all the personal care items and books and things like that. We will get all this out and clean it up, and it'll be ready for next year.
Items like hangers and mirrors go into storage for the summer and will be available free to students next August. Unused personal care items and non-perishable food are passed on to local social service providers like EFA, the Emergency Family Assistance Association in Boulder. Clothing and shoes go to another nonprofit. Wood and metal goes to businesses that recycle those materials. Altogether, Gilbert says almost one-third of the would-be move-out trash is reused or recycled.
In 2019, I think we sent about 130 tons to the landfill and salvaged about 44. So that's a pretty good average for about almost 30%, somewhere around there.
Gilbert expects the 2022 numbers to look about the same as those in 2019. But the last 2 years of the pandemic weren't so good. When students were sent home in the middle of the spring 2020 semester, much more was thrown away due to health concerns. And while there were fewer students on campus a year ago, a lot was still thrown away at the end of spring semester 2021.
I remember last year a move out at Bear Creek. My roommates were just throwing everything out and we're just going to buy brand new things next year, which is kind of a waste.
Michaela Ortiz is one of about 15 students who help Angie Gilbert with organizing reusable items during move out. The junior environmental studies major from Dallas says she was frustrated by how many reusable things her roommates threw away.
They said, it's all right, it doesn't matter, just buy new things. And I was like, okay, not much I can do at that point, but tell them to at least donate it.
About 7,600 students live in 26 dorms on the CU Boulder campus. Almost all of them are freshmen. Will Thomas from Atlanta and Mary Fancher from Vail were two of the last to leave Farrand Hall. They said they weren't aware of the effort to reduce move-out waste.
I don't even know what they do.
Yeah, me neither. I had to throw a lot of stuff away because I'm packing everything into my car, so I couldn't take much, and like everyone left stuff throughout our hallway. Like walking in there's just trash everywhere.
Inside Farrand, there are full white trash bags in front of most dorm rooms. And unlike the organized effort in Libby Hall, there's more of a jumbled pile of items that two students are rummaging through.
Aw, yeah. That Nerf gun is mine.
Oh my God.
It's the Fortnite gun!
Take that, what?
All right.
Who would leave that? It's a Kryptronics board. It's nice.
Soon-to-be sophomores Nathan Petrick and his friend Nick seem pretty happy to find a skateboard and a Nerf gun in the pile. Petrick, an engineering major from Boston, says he didn't know there was a formal recycling program, but he saw others leaving items, so he did too.
I wasn't aware necessarily, but I saw that people were like leaving stuff in our lobby right there, and my friends left a couch right here, and I'm sure someone either took it or it got thrown away. There were bins up there for like clothes, and I put a bunch of my clothes that I'm never going to wear again in there.
Reusing and recycling 44 tons of material is a big deal, but the fact that well over 100 tons is still going to the landfill prompts this message to her fellow students from move-out helper Michaela Ortiz.
I would say be mindful and be smart with your shopping. Think ahead in the future when it comes to move out and do you really need that, and try and save some things, and things can be reused. You don't need to buy the newest thing every year.
Most off-campus rental leases are up at the end of July. So in a couple months, neighborhoods with high numbers of student rentals like Goss Grove and University Hill will have a lot more things in the alleys and on the curbs to either reclaim or send to the landfill. For KGNU, I'm Sam Fuqua in Boulder.
This reporting series was made possible by a grant from Boulder County's Zero Waste Funding Program.
Land trusts offer Coloradans concerned about more frequent and severe wildfires, drought, reduced snowpack, and other growing risks of life on a warming planet an opportunity to join local and national efforts to ward off the most catastrophic impacts of climate change. Eric Galatas has more.
As summer rolls in across Colorado, the threats of wildfire, diminishing snowpack, and prolonged drought weigh heavy on the minds of many residents who cherish the state's iconic landscapes and wildlife. Conservationists are encouraging people to get in touch with their local land trust to be a part of the climate solution. Melissa Daruna with the group Keep It Colorado says investing in conservation is critical for maintaining the state's vital resources and biodiversity.
Because it helps us protect the land and the water and provide habitat for the wildlife, and all of that creates more resiliency and helps to kind of protect us from the most severe impacts of climate change.
Land trusts are already at work using a variety of tools to protect private and public natural and working lands in all corners of the state. Daruna says you don't have to be a landowner to make a difference. To connect with a trust near you, follow the Get Empowered link at keepitco.org. A recent survey found that 83% of Coloradans support a national climate mitigation goal of protecting 30% of America's lands and waters by 2030, but they're not necessarily rolling up their sleeves and getting to work. Daruna says summer is an ideal time to get involved with your local land trust. There are plenty of volunteer opportunities and innovative fundraisers.
Buying tickets to go on facilitated hikes, it can look like volunteering on a stewardship project or a trail restoration project. It can look like buying food from a local farm or ranch that is conserved.
Nearly 9 in 10 Coloradans surveyed said that a public official stance on the environment is important. Daruna says as the November midterms draw closer, it's also important for voters to take action at the ballot box.
Take a deep dive into who is likely to represent them moving forward at the state and the federal level, and making sure that they also, you know, those elected officials represent their constituents' values on the environment and action on climate.
This is Eric Galatas reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Since the Columbine Massacre 23 years ago, about the only changes in gun safety laws have been the 2004 sunsetting of the ban on semi-automatic weapons and the constitutional carry laws of several states allowing open carry. But the U.S. president, who was the most successful in implementing gun safety legislation in state and federal laws, was surprisingly Ronald Reagan, the favorite son of the National Rifle Association. In 1967, Reagan signed the Mulford Act banning open carrying of loaded firearms in California. There are no federal limitations on open carry. Reagan told reporters that he saw, quote, no reason why on the street today citizens should be carrying loaded weapons. Working with then-Senator Joe Biden, Reagan also got credited for playing a critical role in the assault weapons ban of 1994, now expired. Reagan's personal lobbying helped the bill overcome NRA opposition. Banning assault-style weapons like the AR-15 has an approval rate of 67% of voters. Senate Bill 736 would once again ban semi-automatic assault weapons. Then there's the Enhanced Background Checks Act of 2021, H.R. 1446. In 1991, Reagan supported the Brady Handgun Violence Protection Act, which required background checks on most gun purchases. Now 88% of voters support background checks on all gun sales. Closely related is the proposed Jamie's Law. This bill would expand mandatory background checks to include ammunition. It has not even been voted on in either chamber. Red flag laws are designed to prevent the next shooting by empowering family members and law enforcers to seek, quote, extreme risk protective orders, barring people from buying or possessing firearms if a federal judge deems them to be a threat to themselves or others. It's supported by 84% of American voters. One bill put forth by Representative Lucy McBath of Georgia, who lost a son to gun violence, has passed through the House Judiciary Committee. Republican Senator Susan Collins has praised the Maine red flag law, stating that it, quote, requires due process and a medical professional to be involved. She said that she's already spoken with Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat, about moving on the idea. Now, there's also the Protecting Communities and Preserving the Second Amendment Act of 2021 from GOP Senators Grassley and Ted Cruz, and Tom Tillis, to improve submission of records to the NICS, creating a federal task force to target those who illegally attempt to purchase firearms, and studying the causes of mass shootings. But the bill also codifies protections for gun owners, such as allowing interstate firearm sales and transportation, and further defining mental health provisions that restrict some individuals. If you have thoughts on any of these gun safety bills before Congress, you can contact your senators and congressperson. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and springtime, summertime is a time when the bugs can be biting and annoying. So what are you going to do? Are you going to buy that chemical stuff, DEET, that causes neurological damage? Are you going to partner with nature and do what you can for your health of your body and the planet? Because there are things you can do. So here's a few ideas of what we can do. Well, first of all, we need to dress appropriately and know that different bugs have different times of day when they're more likely to bite, but we can cover up. But the good news is there's so many essential oils that repel bugs that can be used, and you can buy something already made. There's all kinds of products made by various companies that are combinations of essential oils. And most essential oils are going to have insect-repelling properties, like lavender, rosemary, eucalyptus, citronella. Wow. And you can, again, buy a combination that has several of those together, or you can make your own. And you don't have to rub your whole body with the essential oils. You can put them a couple drops on your pulse points, the places where you're supposed to put perfume, like the inner wrists and behind your ears. Most bugs do not like the taste of your blood if you eat garlic. So if you're going somewhere where mosquitoes are the state bird, taking some garlic capsules might be a good thing to do. A lot of bugs are attracted to people that eat a lot of sugar, alcohol, tropical fruits and juices. So you can also have some things to do if you do get bit by a bug, such as applying a drop of lavender oil or tea tree oil to the bug bite. You can also take a bath with a cup of apple cider vinegar or a pound of baking soda or half a cup of salt. Those are all things that would be helpful. You can also make a little paste. One of my favorite is a little paste of apple cider vinegar and baking soda to put that on a bug bite. Of course, there's a lot of herbs you can just rub directly on your skin, such as artemisia, which a lot of you people call sagebrush, but technically it's a daisy family member. Now, ticks are another thing, really important to do a tick check. And if they are attached, you need to remove them without leaving their heads embedded in the skin. Yes, Lyme disease is a real thing. So my book, Natural First Aid, has a lot of anti-tick remedies. But yeah, take this seriously. These are a few ideas to get you going and know that, you know, bugs got to live too. We just need to let them know we are not bug food, right? Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Shannon Young has been our producer. Special thanks to Nicole Rubin, Kiara Damari, Alexis Kenyon, Christian Gatterbay, Sam Fuqua, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-7222. 9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then a public affair. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.